Welcome to the Cool Explorations podcast and radio program with your host, Tony Peters. I hope you'll enjoy today's segment.
That's his desire for us. So these are the kinds of things that I get to see, and they inspire me, they encourage me, and I want to see more of it because this is what's going to change the next generation and the next generation and the next generation. Because a lot of people don't realize these are generational patterns that are being passed down. And they're passed down in a number of ways. Even though they're spiritual, they get transmitted and conveyed through us and our communication, through the things that we attend to, the things that we don't attend to, the things that we say, whether we're intentional or not. That's how these things get passed on in our culture. Culture is not just what we eat, right? It's not just the music we listen to. It's how we think. It's how we love. It's how we live. And we get to be intentional about that.
Yeah, and it's amazing to see and realize, you know, you have an impact on your kids, and a great impact. And kids pick up on a lot more than what you think they pick up on. That is something any parent who pays attention to their children will tell you, is that, yeah, your kids pick up on so much that you don't think that they're picking up on. And that carries on with anxiety issues as well. And I know with my own daughter, if I'm anxious, her anxiety is definitely higher. And so it does, it is this generational thing, like you say, whereas it's like, if you try and bring that healing in, and you, even when, if you check yourself, then you can be like, oh, okay, maybe she's feeling anxious because I'm feeling anxious. And because I've been anxious about this thing. And when you really start looking at it in retrospect, then you can be like, oh, okay, maybe I should be fixing this. And then my daughter might, or my son or whatever, might be better in terms of this as well. And to just look for those places of understanding and connection.
It certainly makes a difference, Tony. It makes a difference. I was just thinking about mental health and preparing for this this talk. And I was remembering back in when I transitioned schools. And one of the reasons why I transitioned schools is because I was gifted. I was doing really well in school. And math was one of those subjects that I was really excelling in. And when I got into the new school, I couldn't function. I couldn't process. Yeah. And I never made the connection. I would have this on and off love, hate relationship with math. And it was so drastic that when I did well, one of my teachers was like, are you cheating? Because he couldn't conceive how I could do so well in one moment and do so poorly in another. And it was stress. Stress impacts me, and in that it prevents me from being able to process and be able to think, right? So, you know, it might not have been obviously related, but the stress that I was going through, the stress that my parents were going through, all of those things were having an impact on me. So the beauty of this is, as we learn and as we heal, as we grow, it automatically, it symbiotically impacts our children. Right. So it's all connected, and we get to be intentional about that.
Yeah. Well, and transitioning schools or switching schools is definitely a very stressful time in kids' lives. We moved a lot when I was growing up. So I know that was always a huge struggle. Was that, and I hated new situations. That was part of my OCD and my what I now understand as PTSD from my childhood. And it's just, I don't even to this day like new situations. And so we can think about it and be like, okay, when we move our kids to a new school, it's a brand new situation, and it's no different than us starting a brand new job. We're stressed about starting a brand new job. And we should be. I mean, that there are things that are unknown for us. We don't know what our work coworkers going to be like? We don't know what our boss is going to be like. We don't know what the demands are going to be in this new position. And so we can relate that with our kids and be like, okay, they don't know what their teachers are going to be like. They don't know what new friends they're going to have to make or how people are going to treat them. In your case, going from like a mostly black school to mostly white school, well, that's a completely different environment for you. Same with being in like a regular residential school to being in a more gifted school. Huge adjustments and huge things that you're going through as a child and experiencing that as a parent, we can be like, okay, they're feeling stressed. Obviously, I would feel stressed in the same situation. How can I help them?
Right,
alleviate
right.
some of this stress and looking for those ways.
Yes, and it's really interesting because a lot of this learning for me is in retrospect. You know, I my parents didn't know this. They didn't know to have conversations with me like this. So, you know, as I'm observing my children, I don't know exactly what's going through their minds, but those are the opportunities. I can attend to that. I can pay attention, right? Mm-hmm. I talk to parents about listening with your eyes.
Yeah.
You get to observe things, observe differences, and then inquire. Then inquire. I noticed this. What's going on for you, right? And we help them to recognize certain things. And this is where we can make shifts with our children. We get to help them see, because there's a difference between uncertainty and anxiety. Uncertainty is the unknown, which can make us feel uncomfortable. But when we start to anticipate something negative, we fill in the blanks with negative things.
Yes.
That creates anxiety for us. So one of the things that we get to do is empower our children. And there are a number of ways that we can do it. And sometimes I hesitate to tell people how to do things because then they skip over some steps, Tony. They skip over some steps, right? The most important thing that we can do is be with our children, right? It's hard to be anxious, but worse than that is being alone in our anxiety or feeling ashamed or bad because we feel anxious. And a lot of times parents want to fix things and they want to hurry and fix things, but that only reinforces the idea that something is wrong with the child. So it's so important to exercise this ability, and this comes from prayer again. When we grab hold of this idea that God has a wonderful plan for my child, like God's got this under control, then I'm not as worried. I'm not in a rush. I can be with my child. I can walk with them through this situation. I can slow it down because worry leads to hurry. So I might be worried and I might be hurrying them through, but that's the worst thing for them. We want to be able to stop, empathize, and be like, oh, okay, I can see why you feel that way. I get why you would be worried. We were on our way to dance, and one of my daughters like, "Daddy, I'm scared. I don't want to go." So, right? So, okay, you're scared. What's going on? What's going on? And she started saying, "Well, what if nobody likes me? What if I don't have any friends?" And because I've been through this, I know that's one of the five, what I call the big five. There are five thought patterns.
Yeah, my daughter uses that a lot. The what ifs.
Right? Exactly. Yeah. What if? So I'm like, okay, I'm familiar with this. Okay. So I actually was able to walk and talk her through it by saying, okay, so what are you imagining? Well, I'm imagining this, this, and this, and this. I'm like, okay, I see why that would be concerning for you. But what if you had a teacher who was really loving? And who had a lot of experience. And she could see that all the other kids were nervous too. And she helped you guys to be friends. What if you imagine that? She's like, oh, that feels so much better. Thanks, Dad. And just like that, just like that, she moved on and she skipped off into this class. And it makes a difference when we can understand and we can know how to help them. There's this peace. Yeah. That comes with this level of competence and awareness. And it makes a difference because a lot of parents, they ask me this question, will they just grow out of it? And a lot of people think they will, and a lot of people think that they do, but they don't. They don't. We might developmentally no longer be afraid of, the the monster under the bed or the boogeyman in the closet, but those patterned ways of thinking, that doesn't go away. It just moves from one level to the next and to the next and to the next. It's not until we actually understand, oh, well, I'm using that what if thought pattern. I see. Okay. And then they can shift it, right? So again, I love what I get to do. And I really wish, Tony, that people would not wait until things get so bad before they turn to seek help.
Yeah, well, my wife is super observant. So when you say you can see like with your eyes, it's like, yeah, my wife will look and she'll be like, what's wrong? Even with me, she'll do that. But and with our kids, and oftentimes our kids be like, oh, well, nothing. No, it's fine. My wife's like, no, there's something clearly wrong. You need to vocalize it. Tell me what's going on. And that's the way of helping them process what is going on in their own mind, and then you as a parent can understand it. And again, my wife is way better at it than I am. She's just very, very good at that, and probably from dealing with me for so many years, she's just learned how to be that way with the kids. And when my daughter uses those what ifs, she is like, okay, well, maybe you should start thinking about this from a positive light. What are some, and like you say, the what if this? And my wife usually doesn't use the what if. She's like, usually, okay, so what are some good things that might happen? And that's the exact same kind of thing that you're talking about, the what, using that what if, like these positive things happen instead of this negative.
Right. These alternative possibilities. And it's Philippians 4 that talks about this. Whatsoever things are good, lovely, of good report, if there's virtue, if there's praise, think on these things. These we want to make it a habit, right? We want to make it a habit to shift our thoughts from the negative possibilities to the positive ones. And it is a skill that we get to teach as part of our, and it's, we do this every day. We have opportunities every day to do this. And there's this parallel process I find with parents, and I find it for myself too. It's a blessed burden to have a struggle because we can relate on a level that other people can't. We can relate not just to say, okay, how difficult this is, but we can also relate to say, okay, well, this is how I can be helpful. This is what helped me. And it might not be the exact same. However, the beauty of peace, patience, it's a healing balm. And when we learn to receive that from God, and when we learn to be that way with ourselves, we can be that way with our kids. And it's so good. It's so good for us. And it's so good for them. It's a beautiful thing.
Well, and that ties in with the fruits of the spirit. I found that just when you look at those and you're like, okay, well, he wasn't just saying that for no reason. The fruits of the spirit really do help us at a deeper level to connect with God, but also to connect in our relationships with other people. Like love and kindness and peace. Like these are just basic things that we should be incorporating into our lives. And as Christians, we should be really trying to be like, okay, looking at it, how could I have handled that in a way that reflected upon those fruits?
That's
If
right.
I had done that, this would have been better. And that way, the next time a situation comes up, your mind is already more trained to react that way instead of reacting with the fear, reacting with the anxiety. Your mind is retrained into a way that is thinking in the positive, like we were talking about. And that really, the Bible gives us so many guidelines and teaches us so many things that are just basic ways to help us in our lives. The people are like, oh, the Bible's all theology and or I don't get apologetics and stuff. And it's like, no, that all ties in with life. It's very much a book that is a guide to how to live your life in a way that's going to be meaningful and purposeful. And that's what God is trying to get us to do, is be like, yeah, living through me will help you find purpose and meaning in life. And here's a book on how to do that and how to use your relationship with me to improve your relationship with other people and your relationship with the world that I've entrusted you with. And so I've just found that that's one thing that's very, very helpful to me. And you found another verse that you mentioned is 2 Timothy 1:7. Do you want to just maybe read that verse and explain the importance of that verse and how we apply it for Christian lives?
Certainly. So when Paul is talking to his protege Timothy, he tells him, for God hath not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And to, you know, on the surface might sound like, you know, an encouraging pep talk. Yeah, let's do this. But when you really think about it, this actually helps us understand humanity on a very, very essential level. We will not function well in environments that we do not feel a sense of power, a sense of love, and soundness of mind. So I integrate this into my work with people, in that power is a sense of strength. So when we feel strong in environments where we can impact change, where we actually have choice and we can use this choice to impact change in our lives and others' lives. And when we don't feel that, we feel powerless. Yeah. This is one of the worst emotions for a human being to experience. Then there is love. Love is really about significance. It's about belonging. We want to belong. We want to know that we matter. We want to know where we fit in. We want to know that we are worthwhile and that we will be missed if we're not gone, if we're not here. Yeah. And when we don't feel that, we feel insignificant. We feel unimportant. We feel worthless and useless. Again, these are another set of emotions that are absolutely soul-sucking and hard to live without. And the last one, soundness of mind, which is anxiety. We are robbed of peace when we feel vulnerable, when we are concerned that we don't know what to expect, our environment's unpredictable, we don't know where our next meal is coming from, but also when we don't feel emotionally safe. All of these things, I have this diagram that it's like a Venn diagram. There are these three circles and they overlap and they connect with each other. So when we don't feel strong, we feel vulnerable, we feel unsafe. And a lot of the questions that society is asking today is like, why do I feel the way that I do? How could God allow this to happen? There's a sense of powerlessness and a sense of a lack of safety and a sense of injustice that moves us to say, I don't belong, I can't belong. But the reality is we try to get those needs met in other areas and it doesn't work. It will never work. God alone is the one who can meet these needs. These are not needs as in deficits. They're needs by design. He wants us to come to him when we feel vulnerable, when we feel powerless, when we feel a sense of insignificance. And he meets us with his word. He tells us when we feel unsafe and insecure, I am with you. His word is life and it changes us. When we feel powerless, he says, my strength is made perfect in your weakness. I have a plan for you. I will care for you. When we feel we don't belong, he says, you belong to me. Yeah. I am yours and you are mine. His word reaches us in a place that is so deep that it is a spiritual thing that only his presence can meet. Because the world is an unsafe place.
Yeah, and I think that ties into our suicide rates, why they're so high right now, as well as our divorce rates. Why those are so high right now is people feel powerless and they don't know how to cope and manage with that feeling.
And we expect other people and things to meet these needs for us. Yeah. Your wife, your husband, your child, all of that stuff, they can't meet that need. And it's unfair to put that expectation on them. They're going to fail. They are not enough. It's unfair to put that expectation on ourselves. We are not enough. I cannot be everything to my wife. I cannot be everything to my child. No, that's God's job. And when he fills us up, he meets that need for us. We don't go into relationships seeking to be filled up from other people. Like the woman of Samaria at the well. Like, he's like, when you drink from me, like, you won't thirst again. Like, you will
story.
Be, you experience this well of life springing up in you. You have to give. So you go to relationships not seeking. You go giving because there's an overflow. There's this abundance that we have. And it doesn't mean that we will never, ever not feel significant again. We will, but when we do, guess what? We go back to the source. God, I'm feeling insignificant today. God, in this situation, I feel powerless. I'm feeling unsure and scared here. And we listen and we wait. They that wait upon the Lord, we wait on his word. We will receive strength from him. And it makes all the difference in the world.
Yeah, and part of prayer life is that people often miss is it's not just talking to God and asking for things from God. It is having those moments where you're actually listening to God, letting God speak to you. And when you give those moments of peace, you get some revelations that are just like, wow, if I hadn't been listening, that never would have come to me. And it's just like with all the things that are going on in the world right now that we're seeing with between culture and war and everything. I was in a bit of a tizzy a week ago with some of that stuff, and then I went to prayer, and the answer that came to me when I listened was, I told you this was coming. I prepared you for this, and I was like, yeah. You did tell me. And it really just was God telling me, turn back to focusing on what I've laid out for you. And I've got you because I know what's coming. I know everything that's going to happen. So you can rely on me and turn to me. And it's peaceful because it does. It takes the responsibility off of you. And it puts it, like you say, that's God's responsibility. And it's like, well, yeah, it puts the responsibility back on God, being like, God's got me. He has me. He'll get me through this. And that's why I think you've hosted on Christian television shows before and done some co-hosting. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about what you did on those and spoke on in those times, as well as explain a little bit about that experience? Because I think that ties in with what we're talking about here.
Yeah, certainly. On some level, I somewhat anticipated, but it's been a number of years that I've been a consultant and asked to speak about relationships and healing for many years on Christian shows like 100 Huntley Street and the 700 Club and even The Perspective. And, you know, every now and then I get to host and interview other guests and things of that nature. It means a lot to me because I get to share not just about my experiences, but about how God is helpful, about how God is here, how God empowers us in a very, very unique and one-of-a-kind way that only He can. And I'm not saying other things out there in the world are not helpful, but beyond those things, deeper than those things, is what God does for us. So, yeah, so it's great to be able to be a voice and share what God does, what he can do. And yeah, I get to pray for people, and I do believe in the power of prayer. I'm learning how to pray even more intentionally and effectively. So yeah, I'm grateful.
Yeah, and I think it's so important to have those voices out there, and that's why I love doing testimony interviews. Is it just it relates to different people and hits them at different points in their life, and one guest may not relate to be relatable to this one person, but the next person can look at that and be like, "Yeah, you understand. I didn't think about it that way." Or this person's been through what I've been through, and if they've got through it, I can get through it. And it's that empowerment of knowing that God can get you through these things, and being that voice is super important. So thank you for doing that. Did you want to just give one last shout out for your book before we sign off here?
Yeah, for sure. Shout outs are always good. So, The Art of a Genuine Apology, it is a fact that as imperfect human beings, we will be hurt in our relationships because we are in relationships with other imperfect human beings. So, it makes sense, whether intentionally or not, when we get hurt, that we or hurt others, that we know how to address it. And that is the hope of this book. It is to stop generational patterns from happening by weaving healing elements into our conversations. So this book talks about the fundamentals. Yes, it does talk about the steps. There are concrete steps that you can take, but each one of those steps are filled, and they embody certain values: humility, accountability, responsibility, empathy, and vulnerability. These are things that we cannot heal in our relationships without. So, yeah, it's I think it's a pretty good book. I've gotten a lot of great feedback, and people talk about how it's helped them. So,
Where can they
yeah.
find it?
Oh yeah, it's you can get it through my website, coachdrew.ca, on the resource page. And if you are an Amazon patron, it's there too.
Perfect. Thanks for coming on and sharing with us. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you for listening to the Cool Explorations podcast and radio program. I hope that you've enjoyed today's segment, and I hope that you'll consider supporting us at Cool Explorations on Patreon, as well as you can shoot me an email at tpeters745@gmail.com if you'd like to support in other ways other than Patreon.